Web Talk Radio is brought to you by Web.com, the most trusted name on the net. When you're ready to get on the web, visit Web.com for domain names as low as $4.95. Web.com offers full-featured web hosting, including online store packages, starting at only $7.95 per month. Web.com has thousands of .web.com names available at www.web.com. WebTalk is also brought to you by Replay Radio at replay-radio.com. It turns your PC into a sophisticated web radio VCR. It's a great way to enjoy listening to the radio. Record your favorite music and radio shows and stations, and then listen anywhere and whenever you want on any device you want. Get the free trial download at replay-radio.com.
Thank you for joining us from around the world. This is Web Talk at webtalkradio.com or webtalkguys.com. You're listening to the Internet's Future, and I'm Rob Greenlee.
And right across from Rob is yours truly, Dana Greenlee. We're broadcasting from somewhere near Seattle. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Straight ahead on the program, Google Whacking lives on. Powerline Broadband's about to reach millions and millions. That little search butler Ask Jeeves spends a whole bunch of money to buy a few websites.
Where are all the small screen websites? Google's Frugal goes wireless in our digital mailbag with a message from Filippo in Milan, Italy.
Well, I'm sure we've all heard of the term Google Whack. It's a term that was created back in 2002, and it created this huge media frenzy around Google and what made Google so exciting and spawned new terms like Google bombing and Google hacks. Well, the sport of playing games with Google search is really an innocent form of hacking, and it's something fun for everyday users of Google. Gary Stock is the man behind the famous game at googlewhack.com, and he shares with us just how many whacks he's taken over the years.
People have been stacking those now, as I said, for upwards of 2 years. We're over 310,000 Google whacks. You can get on the site and page through the last 2,000 or so. The strange combination of words are just really part of what makes this interesting. Ongoing, I think that right now we average a minimum of 400 or 500 new Google whacks a day.
Broadband connectivity over power lines has been in development for years and is now a reality with this week's announcement of the first large-scale rollout of broadband over power line technology in the United States. Luke Stewart, CEO of MediaFusion's HyperWires.com site, joins us to explain why broadband over power line is an idea whose time has come to enable people to access the Internet simply by plugging into an electrical outlet in their house.
From my position as a consumer, I would like the ease of being able to go to any place in my home or in my, if I have a larger business or even a larger building or something, to be able to access my own particular electronic data spaces with ease just by moving from plug to plug. Putting any number of people online by plugging them in is a very novel notion.
Hey everyone, ready for some news around the web this week?
Dana, AskJeeves.com is paying about $343 million to acquire the Excite.com and i1.com websites, and what they're trying to do is boost up their market share against industry leaders like Google and Yahoo. And I'm totally amazed that they were able to spend this kind of money to acquire some sites that are really not garnering that much traffic. But I guess when you put them all together, they total up to something significant, I guess.
Well, I sat thinking that Butler probably was swiping the silver, you know.
That's right.
He would save that much money. But come to think about it, I think I remember when I go to ask.com, there were a heck of a lot of little banners up there.
Well, it's a fun website. Fun,
well, no,
fun
I'm
concept.
Saying paid placement of stuff.
They're counting on making a lot of money to make up for that, to pay that $343 million back.
Rob, you've been walking around with that pocket PC just glued to your face all the time. I mean, in bed, everywhere. So I want to know, where can you go and actually see a decent-sized screen on a small screen?
That's the issue here is I've been trying to access websites all over the Internet with my pocket PC, and what I'm finding is that very few websites actually are formatted for the screen size that the pocket PC displays in. Even smartphones, I mean, that's a pretty small screen. And basically, there's only a couple websites that I found that actually have a sensing capability that will sense what browser or device is needed to display that particular website.
And those are?
WindowsMedia.com and AOL.com have the capability that if you enter in their URLs into your smartphone or pocket PC, that they will default over to a small screen version of their website.
Okay, when I worked at Amazon, they launched the mobile version of Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that that would just resolve to that.
You would think that they would build that capability in there, but if you type in Amazon.com or Yahoo.com into your pocket PC or smartphone, it's going to pull up the full-size version of the website.
So to actually get to the small screen, you have to have the exact URL, which is like 50,000 characters long. It's way too long for anybody to type in.
Yeah, exactly. So there are some issues between the capability of big brand websites with these devices. So that's something we should all keep an eye on and ask the companies to do it better.
What you can do is come to our website and see a list of some of the pocket PC-sized screen sites. But just click on the URL because you're not going to want to type it in. Then you can save it to your favorites.
Google has launched a shopping site. It's actually part of their Frugal shopping area. That is going wireless. So they also have a wireless portal that you can access by going to wml.frugal.com, and you can actually see what that portal looks like if you happen to have a cell phone, and search for products and get pricing and all sorts of information on different products based on just a simple keyword search.
Remember that you can't actually order from your phone at Frugal because it's just a shopping service.
It's just a referral site. And if you want to check it out, go to labs.google.com.
Rob, I want to dig into the digital mailbag because we heard from a charming guy from Italy, Filippo. He says, I'm 27 and I'm trying to finish a business degree at Milan University. I do search engine marketing optimization for my website, and I surf a lot in the USA looking for news and info and friends. I'm also managing a sofa company in the north of Milan. I've been to Milan. It's wonderful.
I'm looking forward to going.
It's a small company led by my family, and we focus on the best Italian high-touch furniture and service. And I'd like to say that I did find a nice yellow chair on your site, Filippo. I would like it. Kindest regards and have a nice day, Filippo. Berto, thank you so much. And go to a site at bertosalotti.it, bertosalotti.it.
Filippo, thank you for the email. We appreciate it. And if you'd like to send us a comment or suggestion for the show, you can send it to dana@webtalkradio.com, or you can send it to me at rob@webtalkradio.com, and we want to hear from you. Support for Web Talk every week is provided by web.com. They're the most trusted name on the net, and they're a great place to go to get a new website domain name, as they have pricing as low as $4.95. They also offer great web hosting, starting at $7.95 a month. So go check them out at web.com.
Don't forget our friends over at Replay Radio. It's at replay-radio.com. They have great software you can download. There's even a free trial, but very affordable software that turns your PC into a little web radio VCR so you can record all the streaming stations and shows just like this one and take it wherever you want with you. We're also supported by friends at InfoCreek.com. They're a low-cost website design service. They do great work, very high-tech looking. Definitely check out their portfolio. They're working on our new site. That's InfoCreek.com. Stay connected, because up next we'll be speaking with Gary Stock. He's on the phone, and he's the man behind the famous Google Whack game at GoogleWhack.com.
This is Web Talk Radio.
When I'm driving, I got a guy on the radio who talks to me. I can't see him, but he talks to me.
Oh, yeah! Blow my nose at you, so-called Afro King! You and all your silly English niggas!
Under this garb, we're perfectly ordinary Americans.
Years from now, when you talk about this, and you will, be kind.
If I begin to die, please take this off my head. This is not the way I wish to be remembered.
That makes the Pentagon, the Jet Propulsion Lab, and the Queen's Bank at Georgetown, Cayman Islands. I hacked into them all inside of 19 minutes, plus I reset your systems clock, daylight savings. I got the job?
You got the job.
Listen, hotshot, I'm going to tell you something right now. I don't care for you or for the putrid sludge you're troweling out.
It's really freaking me out, man.
Remember, only G.I. Joe is G.I. Joe.
Damage control is easy. Reading Klingon, that's hard.
My, people come and go so quickly here.
What's a dazzling urbanite like you doing in a rustic setting like this?
Elvis has left the building.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thanks now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
I want to see motion and movement. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay?
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Hey, radio lovers. You can now record thousands of radio stations, listen anywhere you want, and even fast forward over the fluff. How? With Replay Radio. It's easy to use and incredibly cool. Replay Radio turns your PC into a VCR for the radio. To listen, just use your PC, MP3 player, iPod, or car CD player. So what are you waiting for? Try a free demo right now. Visit the Replay Radio website today at replay-radio.com.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophosts.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com. Welcome back to Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com, and thank you for joining us again and listening. I'm Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee is sitting on the mic ready to rock and roll.
Oh, yeah, and joining us ready to rock and roll is the guy who invented the term Google Whack. We've all heard of Google Whack. It was coined back in 2002, and it created this huge frenzy over Google. And a fun thing to do with Google that spawned Google bombing and Google hacking. It's sort of a way to play games with Google search engine. It's sort of an innocent form of hacking that all of us can enjoy.
Gary Stock is the man who coined the famous Google Whack name at googlewhack.com, and he shares with us his journey as the creator of the term in the game. He has also displayed every whack on his website over the years, and he's also the chief innovation officer and technical compass of technology firm Nexerp. Gary, welcome to the show. It's great to have you join us on the program.
Certainly. It's good to be here.
Back a couple years ago, you coined the term Google Whack, and it fed certainly an online craze all around Google and the phenomenon that was going on there. And it became really a well-known type of activity to do with Google. Can you explain to our listeners what a Google Whack is so maybe they can go out there and do it today if they want?
Sure. Well, there's a site we call googlewhack.com. You'll know that if you've used Google, it's very easy, even if you don't mean to find 50 or 100,000 pages as a result of a simple query.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking with some other people online. We decided that if you could find two English words in the dictionary, and when you put both those words into Google, you came back with exactly one result, just one page with both those words, that they were trying to find one. I happened to stumble upon one, and I wrote back to them and said, I would call that a Google whack for a variety of different reasons,
sure.
some funny and otherwise. It stuck, it caught on a little bit, kind of burned, spun out of control across the the blog world.
Yeah.
And within a couple of months, I just began getting a very large amount of email. I mean, I think I got up to about 1,000 emails the day that I finally put googlewhack.com online.
Wow.
So that people would stop sending them to me and start posting them instead. So.
Well, and tell us some of the places you appeared. I remember reading about you in these news magazines and, you know, on TV and stuff.
I think the highest point of it was when CNN, of course, I'm in Kalamazoo, Michigan. CNN called from some Atlanta office, sent a correspondent up to Chicago where he picked up a team who came over to Kalamazoo and did a couple of hours of filming and put that on a CNN show about technical talk. That was peculiar. I also had an email from some fellow somewhere in the south part of the United States who said he was watching CNN and one of the cable network news that runs 24 hours a day and across the bottom was scrolling, you know, that bin Laden is in Afghanistan and these various different things. And then Google Whack, the latest craze, it was mixed in among those things. So I know that it went out, Reuters picked it up after the blogs had their way with it is when the real media, standard media began to pick it up. And once that happened, I know that it appeared in all the major papers in a dozen different languages. I saw it in the Beijing Times and Bangkok and Thailand, and I have no idea what it said except every once in a while all those characters would be interrupted with the word Google Whack.
Yeah, that's great.
And in fact, it's even happening today, this week. Things are still happening even a year and a half or so after coining the term. What's happened recently that you were just telling us about?
Sure. Sure. Well, it's been now, in fact, over 2 years. About a year ago, a fellow named Dave Gorman, he's a comedian in the UK, and I'm probably giving him a plug now that he's given me some. Someone contacted him and said, Dave, I found a Google Whack on your site. In other words, their Google Whack had happened to point to one of his pages, and began to puzzle his way through it. And he's been doing a show he calls The Google Whack Adventure, and in fact now has a book out called The Google Whack Adventure. And I know that next week, because of the news monitoring service that I run, I happened to cross an article yesterday. He's doing a show in Aspen, Colorado, and he is, you know, carrying the torch, so to speak.
Yeah, it
and as
like
a result, I get a lot of kids and adults, and quite a strange mixture of them, including a couple of different teachers who've written to me in articles that I've found, mentioning the fact that they're using Google Whack in the curriculum because it's just interesting enough and challenging enough. It gets kids online a little bit, but they can't quite go crazy, and it forces them to think about vocabulary and spelling and a variety of other things that apparently are a good handle for talking about language and how to use the Internet. Mm-hmm. I don't try to make this stuff happen. When I thought of the word Google Whack, I really only mailed it to a handful of friends who were just vaguely interested, and it kind of got away from me.
Why don't you give us a total of how many Google Whacks you've seen, or do you actually keep track of it somehow?
Well, it's an automated process now, so I don't really have to. Otherwise, I think I'd have gone quite insane a long time ago. But the system at googlewhack.com allows you to put in the two words that you presume have already done some work on at Google itself, because you're rarely going to do this right off the top of your head correctly. Mm-hmm. But then it automatically checks what's at Google and verifies that Google has links to the words. Google has an association with dictionary.com, and so you can look at the top of your Google results, and if you're into spelling checking, you'll see that a live link to dictionary.com in the little blue bar there means that the word really exists. So people have come and done that. The system automatically determines whether Google has exactly one result and whether dictionary.com knows that spelling, which is sometimes part of the game and the puzzle to know which words are really there. And then people have been stacking those now, as I said, for upwards of 2 years, and we're over 310,000 Google Whacks now in the stack. You can get on the site and page through the last 2,000 or so. What I found is that when I allowed people to page further, that's literally all they did. People would just come and page further and further and further back, because the strange combination of words are just part of what makes this interesting. Two words, who really cares? That's all very well and good, and maybe you learn the spelling of something. But the more interesting thing, I think, is what we originally started, and that is, if you suggest two words that are very peculiar, they often generate an image that itself is peculiar. So I give people a space there after their Google Whack to put in a clue or a quote or a question or something to which the Google Whack is the answer or the reply. And so some people get that, and they tend to put in quite political comments. There's quite a bit of discussion of the White House and the Democratic candidates and that sort of thing. Ongoing, I think that right now we average a minimum of 400 or 500 new Google Whacks a day. So they're pretty much there all the time. If you get on the site and look at the Whack Stack, which is where we put them, and then refresh it after 10 minutes or so, my guess is that there'll be people from two or three different countries will have added Whacks to the stack in the few minutes that you've been there.
It is fascinating to peruse googlewhack.com. Now, we only have about a minute left, Gary. I'm sorry about that, because I could go on here.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about.
I'm fascinated by your site, unblinking.com. And then you did mention you're also running a business, the news clipping business. Why don't you fill us in on both of those in the last minute that we have?
Sure. Well, Unblinking is just a place that before there were blogs, I would get requests for information about a particular topic and find myself, knowing a lot about search engines, just interested in digging down into a story. And all I really did there is, over the first few years, now and then I would pick up a story and dig as far into it as I could using just search engines. For example, I looked up the addresses of all of the offices I could find in the World Trade Centers the day that the Trade Centers came down in September of 2001 to see what the Internet thought about that site, about that place, about who was there. And it's been a popular site ever since, people researching what was there, because the records, of course, were destroyed when the buildings came down. Part of what I use in that is my company is named Nexerpt. You'll find it at nexerpt.com, very much like excerpt with an N in front. And we do automated news clipping. It's a very sophisticated kind of a search engine that goes constantly around the web to about 5,000 different targets, newspapers of all kinds in different countries, and extracts for our users the excerpts from various articles that match the queries of the topics that they're interested in. And people that are interested in taking a look at NextCert.com, there actually is a place to jump over to a free trial account and use that for a couple of weeks, and you're able to search through all 40,000 of the new articles that we find every day, and NextCert will pop out the excerpts, the small paragraphs that match your criteria, and drop those in an account so that you can page through them and then deliver them to yourself or to some other audience if you
That's
like.
That's great.
Well, Gary, thank
Gary,
you so
thank
much.
Gary, thank you.
Certainly. My pleasure.
It was a great honor to talk with you because, you know, we've heard of Google
for
a long time.
Yeah.
I am the Google WAC guy now. People have asked me from time to time, how do I find NextCert or how do I just say, look up Google WAC, and it always comes to me. So there it is.
Well, who knows? We may be seeing a Yahoo WAC before too long, right?
People have sent me all sorts of things, including Image WAC, Amazon WAC. Yeah, they have quite a list. And, yeah, everybody's after Google. I'm not sure that they'll ever WAC quite as well as Google has. But,
no, that's true.
More power to them, I guess.
Okay, well, thanks, Gary.
Sure.
That was Gary Stock on the phone with us, the creator of the famous term Google WAC. Don't forget the H. Have some fun and scan through about 300,000 of the Google WACs listed on his site and just try to add a few of your own. Don't go anywhere. In just a flip of the switch, we'll be figuring out how you can get broadband connections just by plugging in to your nearest outlet.
This is Web Talk Radio. Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophosts.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, Web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com.
Dude, check it out. Listen to Web Talk. Totally for sure. Your old man's not here.
And I gotta tell you, fellas, you have got what appears to be a dynamite sound.
Web Talk Radio is back on the air, and this is Rob Greenlee. Thank you for listening. And I've got Dana Greenlee here with me, too.
We all love the idea of getting our broadband faster and cheaper. Broadband connectivity over power lines has been in development for years, and it has a promise of easy and convenient internet access. Well, the first large-scale deployment of broadband over power lines, or what they call BPL, is rolling out to millions of Synergy Power customers in Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky.
Luke Stewart, CEO of Media Fusion's HyperWires.com, joins us to explain why broadband over power line is an idea who's come that will enable everyday net users to access the internet simply by plugging their internet appliance, laptop, media center PC, or desktop PC into an electrical outlet in their house and get DSL speeds. Luke, thank you for giving us a call.
You're welcome, Rob. I'm very excited about your subject matter today.
That's great. Broadband over power lines is something that's been in development for many years. And give us a little description of what the technology does and how it works.
Sure. A set of inductive couplers are used to put a signal onto the actual electrical wire that generally brings power to your home.
Yeah.
These couplers are excited in such a way that they put a signal in parallel streaming with your electricity, carrying either content or opening a channel for communication, much like your home phone line would. And then many of the companies use different types of coupling technology and encoding technology, but it all basically does the same thing, where you have the coupler that puts the signal on the wire, and then you have a set of repeaters sometimes that carries the signal for some distance. And then you have something that looks a little like a plug that goes into your outlet that actually you can plug your computer into and get internet capability.
Yeah, it's certainly a really cool idea to be able to take your laptop anywhere in your house and be able to plug it into a power outlet and get your online connectivity right there. What type of facilities or what type of hardware do you have to have in order to make that connection happen in your home?
Actually, you just need to have the modem, mm-hmm. and you need to be in a service area where they have the where one of the BPL providers are actually putting those on the grid.
And I do want to decipher that, BPL, broadband over power line. So I just wanted to make sure our listeners knew BPL. It's sure. a new acronym to learn.
Yeah.
Sure. It's pretty exciting because, for example, one of the recent pilots that began sometime back in Manassas has generally, with a company called Mainnet, has generally done really well. And for that and a lot of other pilots that have been started about the same time, you've seen some of the amazing announcements that were made this week about Synergy and others rolling out to hopefully lots of customers and providing them very efficient data communications in a very very robust and reliable environment.
Now, why is the whole broadband over power lines something that's going to really catch on in the marketplace where there's DSL and cable out there right now and the growing wireless access that's coming out there? What is going to differentiate this power line broadband that's going to make it compete with that, or is it going to just ride along with it and be a complementary technology?
I think there's going to be several layers as a customer might look at and or a consumer, and from my position as a consumer, I would like the ease of being able, like you said, to go to any place in my home or in my, if I have a larger business or even a larger building or something, to be able to access my my own particular electronic data spaces with ease, just by moving from plug to plug, mm-hmm. or putting any number of people online by plugging them in is a very novel notion. But aside from just the convenience, if you follow the way that technology has improved, and you look at, let's say, like the cellular business, when cellulars first came out, they had spotty services and a lot of drop calls and not very good coverage until of late. You've got pretty much nationwide coverage, and you've got, as you said, the wireless industry has proven themselves to be very robust. Well, in the beginning, broadband over power line, or BPL, may look similar because it may be only appearing in sketchy areas or patches, but as the technology is more integrated within the electrical systems, not only will the technology become more robust and available at lower cost, but the amount of content, the amount of the acceleration of putting content to your home over the electric grid will also occur in parallel.
Mm-hmm. I was just curious because I know this is a little bit of a threat to have this option available, a threat to the Baby Bells, a threat to the other ISP providers. What are you hearing from these competitors, I guess you would call them?
Two things that drive the industry is cost and consumer confidence. Mm-hmm. If the Baby Bells or the phone companies decide that they would make more sense to incorporate additional technology, including broadband over power line, I don't think they would find it such a threat. Mm-hmm. I think that when you try to segregate your technology and force the federal government to go under deregulation and mm-hmm. special regulatory practices, I think that sets up a stage that threatens those entities far worse than any new technology.
Mm-hmm.
And for the consumer's point of view, any way he can get services that are cheaper, that are reliable, is a benefit to him.
Mm-hmm.
So the battlefield is not really between technology issues. It's really business practice issues.
Mm-hmm. One of the concepts that your company is pushing is a version of this that you're referring to as a hybrid version. Why don't you explain to us what that is? I'm not sure that I even totally understand what it is. It's using existing optical fiber networks in conjunction with power lines. Is that what you're proposing here?
Absolutely, because we know a lot of utilities have electrical infrastructure, but maybe your listeners don't also know that many of the electric companies also have large amounts of fiber mm-hmm. optics that are pulled in various service territories. So in order to bring better access and perhaps speedier access, if you will, mm-hmm. Or hyper access, as we like to talk about it, a customer would not only get the benefit of using, say, the current technology of the DSL speeds or the even faster than DSL speed in some cases with some of the BPL technology. But by putting this link with the fiber to the first injection point where you put your signals on the wire to the home, you open up the back end for interoperability. We call it make it upward compatible, so that now you can start, as the technology is implemented and improved in the actual BPL technology for faster speed, you can now start delivering other types of content because you have a fiber connection point directly to it.
Okay.
We think that's the best scenario, and we think people are really going to like getting 450 channels out of their wall plug.
Yeah, that's true. Well, now, what kind of speed are we going to see come through our power plugs? Are we going to see what is comparable to a cable modem speed, or is it have a higher capacity than that? Are we going to see 10 megabits come through that wall outlet, or is it going to be limited to something less than that?
Different systems have different types of top-end speeds, but I think they range from 100 megabit to 500 megabits right now.
Okay. Now, is that going to get better and faster? I mean, is there a new technology on the horizon that's going to come in and upgrade these systems to make them go faster?
Rob, you just said the exact perfect word. Better is always faster.
Well, that's true. I mean,
if it's faster, it's better, and that's what we're
yeah,
about.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what the expectation is with cable and DSL, is that it's getting faster all the time, and that's going to be the expectation for the technology, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. And BPL has come a long way in the last few years. It started as kind of a esoteric notion, and now with people being able to see actual commercial viability and the convenience things we were talking about before, it's going to make a great addition to the information age.
Oh, yeah.
Luke, I understand that the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, like with a lot of things, have something to say about this, and you've actually been involved in giving them some information. Why don't you give us an idea of what the government has to say?
We made a presentation to the FCC recently. I think probably last month. I'm also on the co-chair for the Advanced Policy Committee of National Energy Marketers in Washington, D.C. And they had asked to review some of the specifics of a case study that we're about to begin with some of our partners. And that meeting was joined with also the FERC and representatives from the Department of Energy. It was a very, very interesting meeting. I think the FCC is really behind the notion of broadband over power line being low cost and maybe providing customers with alternatives to communication. And I think from what we gleaned from the conversation, they would agree that faster is also better as long as you pay very close attention to the emissions and so that you don't have some of the signals in some way, the BPL signals, doing any kind of bleeding through to other types of radio signals. And everybody's working on that very hard.
We'll continue our discussion about broadband over power line connections when we come back with Luke Stewart, CEO of MediaFusion at HyperWires.com. This is Web Talk Radio.
I can carry nearly 80 gigs of data in my head. Implant. Wet wire. I had to dump a chunk of long-term memory.
Hey, radio lovers! You can now record thousands of radio stations, listen anywhere you want, and even fast-forward over the fluff. How? With Replay Radio. It's easy to use and incredibly cool. Replay Radio turns your PC into a VCR for the radio. To listen, just use your PC, MP3 player, iPod, or car CD player. So what are you waiting for? Try a free demo right now. Visit the Replay Radio website today at replay-radio.com.
When I'm driving, I got a guy on the radio who talks to me. I can't see him, but he talks to me.
The Web Talk Guys, here and now.
Welcome back to Web Talk Radio, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee's in here with me.
And joining us is Luke Stewart. He's telling us about broadband over power line connections.
Why is the FCC so interested in this technology? Are they seeing it purely from a competitive standpoint, or are they looking at it from a distribution standpoint of being able to cover the entire country with one technology versus the cable and DSL, which is very limited?
I couldn't answer for them, but I could definitely send you a couple of speeches that were made by Michael Powell and others that are incredibly invigorating. I mean, they just in my opinion, they're trying to promote innovation that brings the value to the customers and options for choice and communication.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's certainly a third wheel on this spoke of communications, and it certainly has the potential to be available at every outlet in the whole United States. And that, I mean, that's certainly a terrific solution as far as I'm concerned. Now, is there a complementary piece to this to the whole wireless thing? Now, you know, there's wireless broadband that's going everywhere. Do you see that as also a competitive piece to what you're doing with this this Powerline broadband?
Actually, no. That's why we call it hybrid PLC,
okay,
or hybrid BPL, because we want to integrate the best solutions in wireless with the best solutions in fiber, so as a customer gets the most robust service capability with our system. Basically, it boils down to this. If you have fiber that's pretty close to a service area and you can put your point of presence on the fiber backplane and then now put your technology, your BPL technology, into a neighborhood, then that's really neat. If you're in some of these rural areas where you don't have so much fiber, but you still would like to make connections, like in some of the rural electric cooperative scenarios or whatever, it might be very useful to use some wireless technologies. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, in some of the high-density areas, even in towns and municipalities, it would be better, or in some cases, to share the information throughput with wireless. Well, that's exactly the reason why we wanted to take a best-fits-best approach to our problem-solving. We don't want to not use a lever are an enhancement of a technical capability, because if we kind of limit ourselves to using only BPL technologies or only wireless technologies, then we kind of leave our customer out of the loop of getting anything you want.
Okay, so it's all about having, you know, ubiquitous coverage of a particular area, of going to wherever the actual need is. Now, what type of devices are we going to need to be able to make a connection with this? Now, I know that there's technologies out there right now. You can plug almost like a little modem into the power plug and then actually plug your computer into that. Is there going to come a time where all of these laptops and computers have special power supplies that will actually funnel that signal through just a regular plug right into that power plug?
I can see that on the event horizon. There's an MSO in Salem, Illinois, called Unified Technologies Group. Mr. Ben Pilani is one of the people that are putting this case study that I've been talking about together with several Fortune 100 companies. I think the vision for the case study is to find a way to upgrade a PLC component so that they will carry very high bandwidth and also use technology to reduce noise so that they can gain distance and therefore cut the cost of having to use so many repeaters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's only event horizon that those technologies and that development will occur. What the timeline is, I'm just not sure.
You just say you don't know what the timeline is, and of course, that's all I want to know. I mean, the timeline to get it into laptops and, you know, the power supply, but I just want to know when I can have that option here and now. So obviously, I'm waiting for my power company in my local town to get on board with this. What can I do, or what can any of our listeners do to encourage this next step?
That's a good question. I would say that one of the best things to do is talk to your local power coordinators, maybe talk to some of the people in the utility industry that are associations. I think it's probably good to let the FCC and some of your representatives, senators, congressmen and such, know that there's interest, because all that effort translates to grassroots changes and support. I always think about, you know, all these consumers that get this ability to move around in their home, mm-hmm, but it's also really neat if schools get the capability to have everybody plug in anywhere they want.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, there's just a lot of things that can come out of this. Hospitals, that's the reason I indicated earlier, some of these larger structures can also benefit from this a great deal.
Some cities around the country have built out their own fiber distribution and, you know, are rolling out cable TV signals and those kind of things as part of the utilities company. Do you see some of those cities that are spending money on fiber are actually going to feel that this technology is going to make that investment kind of a long-term waste for them?
I hope not. One of the other reasons we wanted to do the hybrid BPL is because we really see value in all the technologies. We see high value in fiber, high value in wireless technology, and high value in BPL technology. Mm-hmm. And we think when those things interface, it's kind of like when your computer started out with 64K in a floppy disk.
Yeah.
We really didn't have the application support on the PC level to be able to do a number of things. But as people started writing more and more software applications, it became more useful as a device itself. And today, I doubt that anybody that was looking at the Commodore 64s or these K-Pros or any of these early Apples or IBMs that would have ever dreamed that you'd have something that was running at 2.5 gigabits or gigahertz on your desktop.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
I think it's a very rich environment. The technology environment is going to be well served by BPL.
So, Luke, if any of our representatives or our utilities want to find out more, is it better for them to contact, could they get more information from you at hyperwires.com, or is that where we would point them?
Yes, that would be fine.
What will you help them do? Or are you, would you supply different geographical areas across the country?
What we're doing is working with, like I said, MSOs and others that are forming BPL projects so that we would be able to try to help in any way we could to accelerate that process in any area. Yes.
Excellent. How did you get involved in this whole industry? I mean, did you always have this affinity toward getting faster, better connections to the Internet?
It started about 1990 when I was working on a medical project that was designed to transmit ultrasounds over the telephone from a remote area where doctors may not have very much experience in certain types of cardiac problems and imagery.
Yeah.
And these teaching hospitals like, you know, UCSD or UCSF or Mayo Clinic, larger you know, facilities that had tons of experienced doctors would be able to interpret these images and tell whether or not somebody was having a really bad cardiac problem or just some heartburn from pizza. You know, so believe it or not, there's a lot of surgery that happens there, at least in those. In 1990, it was a high concern that the imagery or the imaging equipment specialists that were trying to use those pieces of equipment didn't have the capability to grow at the pace the imaging was trying to help them grow. So they were trying to connect these doctors with this network. Well, the problem was there was no phone that could carry the signal.
Oh.
So you couldn't save lives even if you wanted to, even if we started using compression and everything else, because some of the telephone companies had designed switching technology to prevent that. You could buy direct lease lines, but then the costs were so prohibitive that small rural doctors couldn't afford to have the connectivity anyway. So that's when I made up my mind with a few other people in the computing industry to say, hey, you know, we have to get faster to communications. That's all there is to it.
Oh, okay. And that kind of moved you down this path and got you involved in powerline broadband kind of technologies.
Yes. From that, we went into studying all the different methods and systems that were being used by the telephone companies. And then I participated in a powerline communications symposium in Essen, Germany in 1996. And that's where a number of countries had got together to present abstracts and theories about how to solve the power line communications problem, and it's been really fast and furious since then.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, Luke, thank you for joining us on the show. It was great to hear about power line broadband. It's really, I think, the next hot thing and the next way that all of us are going to get connected to the Internet.
I appreciate you taking the time, and I really enjoyed speaking to you as well, Rob.
We've been having a conversation with Luke Stewart, CEO of MediaFusion at hyperwires.com. That's it for the show this week.
Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to having you listening next week. Go check out our website at webtalkradio.com and keep up to date with what's happening on the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.